synonyms and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. King Prithu worshipped the demigod, the great sages, the inhabitants of Pitriloka, the inhabitants of Gandharva Loka, and those of Siddha Loka, Charana Loka, Pannaga Loka, Kinnara Loka, Apsara Loka, the earthly planets, and the planets of the birth. He also worshipped many other living entities who presented themselves in the sacrificial arena. With folded hands, he worshipped all these, as well as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the personal associates of the Lord, by offering sweet words and as much wealth as possible. After this function, they all went back to their respective abodes, following in the footsteps of Lord Vishnu. Purport. The modern so-called scientific society, in modern so-called scientific society, the idea is very prevalent that there is no life on other planets, but that only on this earth do living entities with intelligence and scientific knowledge exist. The Vedic literatures, however, do not accept this foolish theory. The followers of Vedic wisdom are fully aware of various planets inhabited by varieties of living entities, such as the demigods, the sages, the pitas, the gandharvas, the pannagas, the kinnaras, the charanas, the siddhas, and the apsaras. The Vedas give information that in all planets, not only within this material sky, but also in the spiritual sky, there are varieties of living entities. Although all these living entities are of one spiritual nature, in quality, the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have varieties of bodies due to the embodiment of the spirit soul by the 8 material elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego. In the spiritual world, however, there is no such distinction between the body and the embodied. In the material world, distinctive features are manifested in different types of bodies in various planets. We have full information of the Vedic literature that in each and every planet, both material and spiritual, there are living entities of varied intelligence. The earth is one of the planets of the Bhurloka planetary system. There are 6 planetary systems above Bhurloka and 7 planetary systems below it. Therefore, the entire universe is known as Chaturdasha Bhuvana, indicating that it has 14 different planetary systems. Beyond this planetary system is the material sky. Beyond the planetary systems is the material sky. There is another sky which is known as Parabrahma, or the spiritual sky, where there are spiritual planets. The inhabitants of those planets engage in varieties of loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which include different rasas or relationships known as Dasa Rasa, Sakha Rasa, Vatsala Rasa, Madhurya Rasa, and above all, Parakya Rasa. The Parakya Rasa, or Paramour love, is prevalent in Krishna Loka, where Lord Krishna lives. This planet is also known as Golok Vrindavan, and although Lord Krishna lives there perpetually, he also expands himself in millions and trillions of forms. In one of such forms, he appears on this material planet in a particular place known as Vrindavan Dham, where he displays his original pastimes of Golok Vrindavan Dham in the spiritual sky in order to attract the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. So, Prithu Maharaj is performing the sacrifice, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jogeshwar Vishnu, personally appeared in the sacrificial arena from the sacrificial fire, and along with came, and at that time, different living entities also came. The inhabitants of Pitriloka, the inhabitants of Gandharva Loka, then Siddha Loka, Charana Loka, Pannaga Loka, Kinnara Loka, Apsara Loka, the earthly planets and the planets of birth. So this way we can see that there are different types of planetary system. There are different planetary systems, and in those planetary systems there are different kinds of living entities. And actually all these living entities are considered to be in a more elevated platform than the human being. The Pitrilokas, the other Pitriloka is the abode where the forefathers go. Then inhabitants of Gandharva Loka. Gandharva Loka also is another planet where the Gandharvas reside. Gandharvas are very expert musicians. They sing for the demigods. In the court of the demigods, the Gandharvas sing. They have beautiful voice and they are very artistic. So when somebody is very artistic, he is elevated to the Gandharva Loka. In the earth planet, we see that there are some genius, like people like Mozart and Bach, Beethoven in the West. They are actually very talented musicians and they meditate on music. Their whole meditation is on music and their existence is music. So after death, they actually get a higher position. They are elevated to a higher planetary system. And that is known as Gandharva Loka. And there is another loka called Apsara Loka. Apsaras are the dancing girls of the heavenly planet. They are very expert dancers. So when somebody meditates on dancing all the time, they get elevated to the Apsara Lokas. The Apsaras, Prabhupada often call the Apsaras as the society women of heavenly planets. They are like, they just entertain people, entertain the inhabitants of the heavenly planet. And then there is also a planet called Charana Loka. Charana Loka, Charanas are the poets. So these people are very poetic and they are very expert in describing things in beautiful words. Then there is another planet called the planet of Pannagas or the planet of the serpents. There are planets that are inhabited by the serpents and or snakes. And they are also in a very elevated position because they have the mystic power of changing their forms. They can take up any gross material form. Like we know Takshak, the snake bird, he came to bite Parikshit Maharaj in the disguise of a Brahmana. He took up the human form and he was coming to the assembly on the bank of Yamuna in the disguise of a Brahmana. And sometimes the ghosts also have been described as the higher living entities, higher than human beings, because all these living entities are more in the subtle material platform. There are two considerations. One is the subtle material consideration and the other is that their bodies are made with higher elements. Like human, our bodies are made mostly with water. Our body is actually watery body. The tree body is more of an earth body. That's why when a tree dies, the body remains because it's solid, it's like earth. Whereas a human being, when he dies, his body dissolves. And actually, one fourth of the human body is water, and only four-fifth is water and one-fifth is earth, a solid matter. So there are living entities who have fiery bodies. All our bodies have five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and also have mind, intelligence, and false ego. But whatever is the predominating factor We are considering the predominating factor or the predominating element of the body. Like in our bodies, the predominating element is water. There are living entities there with whom the predominating element are air or fire. There are living entities with fiery body. Like in sun planets, the inhabitants have bodies made of fire. Most part of the major part of their major elements of their body is made of fire. Then there are some living entities, those who have aerial body. The predominating part of their body is air. And in our bodies also we have these elements. Like we have fire. We have fire, like one fire is the fire of digestion. We have the fire in the body, that's why the body remains hot. And there is a heat in the body, some temperature in the body. So obviously there must be some fire, otherwise where the temperature is coming from? 97 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. What is in centigrade?
36.
Okay. So, and this fire is responsible for our digestion. When we have the good fire in the body, then we can digest a lot of food. Right? When you have a bad fire of digestion, when the fire is weak, then we cannot digest when we eat. So the way the people, those who have fiery body, they can eat a lot. like fire god, he eats all the ghee offered in sacrifice. Hundreds of thousands of ghees used to be offered sacrificial fire. And fire god, Agnidev, would just digest everything. But sometimes he also would get into trouble. Like there would be some sacrifice where there would be so much fire that he would suffer from dyspepsia called Agnimanda. The dyspepsia is the disease where the fire becomes weak, when one can't digest. And once Agnidev had this problem, and so the cure, he went to Dhanvantari, and Dhanvantari said that the only cure for your indigestion, you have got the disease of dyspepsia because you ate too much ghee and you can't digest it. So the only way you can cure it is if you can eat up the forest of Khandava. There's a forest called Khandava Prastha, huge forest. So Agnidev was instructed to eat that forest, that is, burn the forest. And that's how cure himself from the disease of indigestion or dyspepsia. But in the Khandava forest, Takshaka was residing, and Takshaka was friend of Indra. So whenever Agni went to burn this, the Indra came and started pouring rain. So Agni could not eat the forest or burn the forest. But he was in trouble again. So he approached Arjun and said, please, you help me out. That this Indra is causing me problem, I can't eat it up because he is protecting his friend Takshak. Because he is residing in the forest. So whenever I try to eat the forest up, he starts pouring torrents of rain. So Arjun said, okay, fine, don't worry. So Krishna and Arjun went, and Arjun stopped Indra from pouring rains. Like when Indra would start to shower rains, Arjun would release some weapon that would counteract the rain. And so he allowed Agni to eat up the forest of Khandava. And Agnidev became very... And then there was a demon called Mayadana. So he was rescued by Arjun. So Maya told him that, well, please let me serve you. He was a demon. He was the architect of the demon. A very expert architect. And he actually built the Indraprastha for Pandavas. And it was such a wonderful palace. The whole city was built by Maya Danava. It was such a wonderful structure that the places where it seemed to, where it was, the people with, those who are crooked, they would see the land as water and water as land. So Duryodhan, when he came, he started seeing everything topsy-turvy. And he saw land as water. And he tried to very carefully walk through the place, as if trying to lifted his clothes and tried to walk, but it was actually plain land and marble walkway. And the places where it was actually water, it appeared to be like land to him, and he fell into the water. And Draupadi was very amused, very much amused, so she started to laugh, seeing Duryodhana's distress. And he felt very insulted, and that's why he took revenge by challenging, by inviting them in a game of dice and taking everything away from them. And so Agnidev was allowed to eat the forest of Khandava. And being pleased, he gave Arjun a celestial chariot, and he gave Arjun a bow called Gandiv, and a tun, that is a place for carrying the bows. What's the word for that? It's a kind of a bucket to carry the, to keep the bows there. And that that was it's a very slender kind of a bucket, and the warriors used to keep their bows there. And it was a celestial bucket of arrows, and that would never exhaust. Always there would be arrows. So Arjun didn't have to carry thousands of arrows with him. He simply had that akshaya tun. And because Arjun was so expert that sometimes he would release the bows that would cover the sky. Thousands of bows were released in practically no time. Such powerful personality. So, yeah, to go back to that point, like we have different kinds of bodies, material bodies. Some bodies are made of mostly earth, some bodies are made of mostly water, some bodies are made mostly of fire, some are of air, and some are of ether. And beyond that, we have our subtle bodies made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. But beyond that, we have our spiritual body. So ultimate goal of life is to become freed from the material attachments, become free from both material bodies, gross and subtle, become free from all the eight material elements, and then go back to the spiritual nature in our spiritual body. It's our subtle body that is the important criterion. When we have our subtle body, as long as we have our subtle bodies, we have to come back again and again. Actually, at the time of death, we give up our gross body. But because we have the subtle body, we again have to come back to another gross body. But freedom actually means to become free from the subtle body. We cannot become free from our gross body, because the gross body is an award of the nature. The nature has given us the gross body, and we can't give it up. Every body has certain duration. Like every body, the human body has a duration of 100 years. Now, due to our simple activities, our life becomes shorter. But actually, a human body is supposed to last for 100 years. And we can't get rid of it. No matter how hard, and it's actually a crime to give up the body. Like when Sanatana Goswami wanted to commit suicide, wanted to give up his body, then Mahaprabhu chastised him. He says, Sanatana, do you think by giving up your body you could get Krishna? If by giving up bodies we could get Krishna, then I would have given up thousands of bodies, millions of bodies to get Krishna. But you can never get Krishna by giving up your body. So that's why our understanding, as opposed to Buddhism and Mayavad, is to use the body in the service of Krishna. We have this body. Nature has given us this body. It's a wonderful benediction. So why should we give it up? We must use it in the service of Krishna. And especially when you get the human body, it's actually the most wonderful body. The earth planet is situated in the middle part of the universe. And above the earth planet, there are six higher planetary systems, and below, there are seven lower planetary systems. So earth is situated in the middle, and in the earth planet, we get the human birth, human body. And this human body is the most precious body. If we have got higher bodies in higher planetary systems, then probably we would have had more subtle enjoyments according to the material standard. And material standard enjoyment means dhanam, janam and sundari. So in higher planets, yes, one can get more wealth, one can become more powerful, more famous, and one can have access to more beautiful women. But that is not the goal of life. That is all material illusion, to aspire for these things. So a wise man will not aspire to become even elevated to the heavenly planets. He will say, what's the use of going to the heaven? On the other hand, it will become more difficult to become Krishna conscious. There will be so much comfort, so much material enjoyment that I may forget Krishna. So better not go to the higher planetary systems. So that's how the living entities, especially the devotees of Krishna, think. But if Krishna wants them to go to the higher planetary systems, they feel, okay, so Krishna wants us to go there, so let's go and preach there. Devotees, wherever they go, they go there for preaching of Krishna consciousness. So that's why he is totally unattached. He doesn't care whether he is elevated to the higher planets or he is demoted to the lower planets. He knows that wherever he goes, he'll preach Krishna consciousness. The way devotees are not attached to either go to India or to Africa or to America. They're just happy wherever they are because they know that they'll be able to preach Krishna consciousness wherever they are, and they will be able to associate with the devotees wherever they are. Because by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, ISKCON has spread all over the world, so wherever the devotees can go anywhere and have the association of devotees. So that's why they are not worried. They don't mind even going to Africa. They don't also mind going to America. They don't mind going to Russia. They don't mind, of course, going to India. Because although materially India is not very nice now, because of the bad management, there is a lot of poverty. Because of the sinful activities of the people, there is a lot of suffering. But devotees are happy. And actually when they go to India, they get very enlivened. Because Krishna consciousness is still very prevalent in India. When one wants to become Krishna conscious, he gets wonderful opportunities in India. There are so many temples to visit, so many holy places to visit, and so many nice devotees to associate with. So, but devotees are not attached. If somebody asks, well, now you have to go to Siberia or Alaska, and he'll say, fine. So how many books should I take? So that is the devotee, that's how the devotees feel. That actually an indication that after death, devotees will be unattached. At the time of death, he'll feel, well, wherever Krishna puts me, I'll be able to preach. I pray that I can preach Krishna consciousness. I can remain Krishna conscious and not forget Krishna. That's why Mahaprabhu's prayer is, na dhanam na janam sundarim kavitangva jagadisha kamaye, but mamo janmoni janmonishare bhavatad bhakti ahaitukitvai. All I want is to remain in your service life after life. Devotees don't say, well, Krishna, after this life, please take me back to Godhead. That is also Maya, to pray like that. In the initial stage, one may think like that. But ultimately, devotees feel that doesn't matter. I am in Vaikuntha. I'm already in Vaikuntha, so why should I separately desire to be in Vaikuntha? Because by Prabhupada's mercy, by the mercy of the devotees, I'm always able to think of Krishna. Wherever I go, there are the devotees, there is Krishna conscious programs going, there are temples, there is Krishna prasad. So why should he separately desire to be elevated to the spiritual sky? That is not very advanced approach, I would say. Although Prabhupada said that one must aspire to go back to the spiritual sky, but that Prabhupada said for the preliminary stage. In the initial stage, if one does not have that kind of attachment to the spiritual sky or to go back to the spiritual nature, then he'll fall into Maya and start doing all kinds of nonsense. So because we do not want to suffer, we must be situated in the spiritual platform. And when we become situated in the spiritual platform, then we realize that there is no difference between ISKCON and Vaikuntha. If I'm in ISKCON and if I'm in Vaikuntha, what's the difference? If we are elevated to Vaikuntha, what will you do? Have a lot of fun? No. In Vaikuntha, you will associate with the devotees, ask the devotees about Krishna, talk about Krishna, and preach to others about Krishna. So you simply become Krishna conscious in Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada has provided us with the facilities to become situated in Vaikuntha, being situated in this earth planet through ISKCON. So why should we separately want to be elevated to Vaikuntha? If we separately desire to be elevated to Vaikuntha, then we'll actually end up in the heavenly planets. If we think, well, Vaikuntha is a nice place, there's a lot of fun, there's a lot of whatever I would want, I'll get, because there are plenty of desire trees and a lot of touchstones, so I'll just use them for my enjoyment. Then Maya will say, okay, fine, so go to the heavenly planets. So he'll become tricked by Maya. So a devotee should always remain fixed up in his Krishna consciousness. That no matter whatever happens, he doesn't want to be deluded by any tricks of Maya. So that is the position of a devotee, and we must understand that wherever we are, we must try to become Krishna conscious, and then we are safe. And that's why at the after death, who knows where Krishna would like want us to send? And that education has been given very wonderfully in Mahabharata. Although people cannot understand that. In the Mahabharata, there is a description that at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, after the Pandavas went to Mahaprasthan in the great departure and gave up their bodies one after another, then Yudhishthir finally was promoted to heaven. He was the only one who was promoted to the heavenly planet. So he went to the heavenly planet and he saw that Duryodhana and others are having great time in heaven. And he asked, where are my brothers? And he was told, well, they are actually in hell. So Yudhishthira said, well, then let me go to hell. I don't want to be in heaven without my brothers. So Yudhishthira decided to go to hell. Now, Pandavas, we know, the devotees know that the Pandavas were the great devotees of Krishna. So why they should be in hell? But Krishna sent his devotees to purify hell. Pandavas went to hell to preach to the sinful people and say, chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. or follow the regulative principles and give up all sinful activities. And to deliver the conditioned souls, the suffering souls in hell, Krishna has created the Ekadasi. So if we ever go to hell, we must remember to give the right instructions. Right? Observe Ekadasi and chant Hare Krishna. And there is no question of following the regulative principles, because they are forced to follow there. They are punished so much that there is no question of drinking, there is no question of taking. They are forced sometimes to eat meat. No, not meat. They can't eat meat actually. They suffer the reactions of eating meat. So as a result of eating meat, they are forced to eat stool. So obviously no one likes to eat it. So it's a great torture. And for illicit sex, their body is torn into pieces. In fact, they run through a kind of a device that has very sharp knives. And it's a kind of a wheel with sharp knives. What's it called? They plane the metal. It's a roller. Yeah. It's a roller with sharp knives all over. And the body is passed through that knife, passed through the roller. As first of all, the body is squeezed. And then it is cut into pieces. So you wanted to enjoy with your body, now you suffer for that. So every material enjoyment, illicit material enjoyment, has its reaction in the hellish planet. So people are suffering so much in the hell. But if at all Krishna wants us to go there, we'll be happy to go there. Like, we don't mind going to hells. Actually, there are so many hells in the world today. Europe is a big hell, America is a hell. So we don't hesitate to come to these places to preach. So we won't be, and we, although we come to these hellish places, but we do not become affected by the hellish condition. So even if we have to go to hell, then we won't suffer the hellish condition. For a devotee, possibilities of material enjoyment is actually hellish. Whenever there is a big possibility of sense enjoyment, devotee feels, oh, it is hellish. Because he sees the reaction. That if I indulge in material enjoyment, then I have to pay the price through the reaction. Or we can take another condition, that materially, Indian condition is pretty hellish. It's very hellish, apparently. But if you know, I mean, those who stay in India, they know that it's not so bad. In the condition in India is actually very wonderful. Because for a devotee especially, devotee's biggest pleasure is actually relishing Krishna prasad, right? And at least in India, the prasadam is very good. And so anyway, we have to understand that the material nature is hellish. Whether we are in here, India, or in Brussels, or in Timbuktu, it's everywhere, it's hellish condition. So we have to realize that either in hell or in heaven, our duty is to preach Krishna consciousness. And then going back to God, it depends simply upon Krishna. When Krishna wants, we will go to God, go back to Vrindavan. Otherwise, we don't mind staying here, life after life after life. But let us not fall into maya. That is the prayer of a devotee. Mamo janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahaitukitvai. Let me remember you, my Lord, all the time, and let me become your servant, life after life. I heard
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, soon before he left this planet, one day he was looking up at the moon. And he commented, the inhabitants of moon planet have become un-Krishna conscious, are becoming un-Krishna conscious. And soon after that, he left his body. So, some devotees think that he actually went to the moon planet to preach. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So devotees are not attached, and this is also the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the Tattvavadis, the followers of Madhvacharya. The followers of Madhvacharya, their goal is to attain liberation. Not Sajujya liberation, but Sharupya, Samipya, Shalokya and Shashti. These four positive liberations they aspire for. So when Mahaprabhu met them, Mahaprabhu asked them that, what is the goal of life? So they said liberation is the goal of life. Not Sajujya, but Sharupya, Samipya, Shalokya and Shashti. Then Mahaprabhu said, but here in the scripture it says that the mukti or liberation personified with folded hand is begging the devotees to engage her in service. And also it has been said that diyamanam na grinhanti bina mat sevanam jana. Even though I offer them liberation, they don't want to take liberation, my devotees. So then why are you aspiring for liberation? So they realized that actually devotees are already liberated. So there is no need to separately ask for liberation. Either in hell or in heaven or in the material platform, material planet, wherever they are already liberated. So that's why devotees do not separately aspire for liberation. We have got the holy name, we have got the process of Krishna consciousness, we have realized the importance of becoming Krishna conscious and becoming devotees of Krishna. So what more is there to aspire? Now only thing that we have to aspire is to practice so that we can become perfect. We have the process, now we simply have to aspire for becoming perfect by practicing. If we do not practice, then we'll end up with trouble. Like, we have got the process and now we have to try to become perfect, to become properly situated in the process. If we don't, then we'll be in trouble. Like even if we go to Vaikuntha, but if we do not render pure devotional service, will we be able to remain in Vaikuntha? We won't be. So in Krishna consciousness, there is no question of chance and accident. We won't by chance be elevated to Vaikuntha, or we won't accidentally end up in Vaikuntha. We have to try ourselves to become purified. And when we become totally purified, then we are already situated in Vaikuntha. So there is no need to separately ask for elevation to Vaikuntha. And another example that can be given here is that sometimes we see that some government employees in the prison house, they say some people have been appointed by the king, those who are working in the prison, right? Like the prison warden, the prison in charge, the guards in the prison, the workers in the prison, those who are doing different service in the prison. Now they may be in the prison, but are they prisoners? Although the prison warden is sitting in the prison, is he a prisoner? The guard, the sentry in the prison, is he a prisoner? No. Although these people are in the prison, they are not prisoners. Why? Why they are not prisoners? Because they are serving the king. They have become the prisoners are the people, those who have defied the king, those who have revolted against the king, those who didn't want to abide by the law of the king. They are suffering in the prison. But those who are submissive to the king, for them there is no prison and no suffering. So when we become submissive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, then we automatically become free. Although we may be in the prison house of material nature, but we are not imprisoned. And if the person who is serving the king in the prison, or the king told that you do this service, king gave him a service, your service is to serve food to the prisoners, right? So king appoints somebody whose job is to serve the food to the prisoners. Now if he thinks, well, I don't actually like to do it, let me go out and enjoy. I don't like to render service in the prison. And let me go out and enjoy outside. There is a discotheque, there is a pub, and there is so many things. Then that is Maya. He is not rendering his service properly. So if, while rendering service to Krishna, if we want something else for our sense enjoyment, then that is Maya. That means to give up Krishna's service and desire to go back to Vaikuntha is actually Maya, according to the pure devotional understanding. So Vaikuntha is non-different from service to Krishna. So when we serve Krishna, then we are already in Vaikuntha. But if we think that, well, now let me somehow or other remain in ISKCON, and at the end of my life I'll go back to Vaikuntha. Now let me just try to eat and sleep and somehow hold on to ISKCON, right? Because Prabhupada gave a guarantee that whoever stays in ISKCON will go back to Vaikuntha. Then that will be Maya. We must understand that ISKCON is Vaikuntha. ISKCON is non-different from Vaikuntha. These temples are non-different from Vaikuntha. The devotees are non-different from the associates of Krishna in the spiritual sky. And when we recognize that, when we realize that, then we are situated in Vaikuntha perfectly. And that's what we must aspire for. Hare Krishna, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yes. Does anybody have any question? Yes. No, these forefathers are actually, every human being belongs to certain gotra, right? Certain line, certain lineage, right? They start from different sages. And like there is a Kashyap gotra, Vatsa gotra, then there are many other gotra. Of course, our gotra is Achyuta gotra. Achyuta is Krishna. So we devotees belong to Achyuta Gotra. But otherwise, usually, every human being is coming from some Prajapati or certain sages. And those who are connected to them, linked up with them properly, they remain in Pitriloka. They go to Pitriloka. Like say, for instance, one belongs to the Bhargava Gotra. Or Bharadwaj Gotra, right? So if he remains fixed up to his Gotra, then he will go back to So maybe you can throw some topics. Bridget, where is Christian? He's coming. So, maybe I can briefly tell you what I did all this while, reporting. From here I had to go to Ireland. It was in it was not in my schedule, but all of a sudden there was a need because the GVC of Ireland, Prithu Prabhu, called me up and he said that there was a revolution and he needed some help. And so I went there, and actually it was not exactly a revolution, but a lot of misunderstanding between the devotees and Prithu Prabhu, mainly because we have to realize that the devotees are growing up and we have to give them some room to take a step forward. Hare Krishna. And if we don't, then there will be a lot of discontentment, and I think that was the problem there. And anyway, ultimately everything went on very nicely. And then I had to go to Italy. And I was there for about a week. My original plan was to travel all over Italy, especially. First I went to Milan, Gallaratre, and then my plan was to go to Florence, Villa Vrindavan, and then to Rome. But when I went to Milan, Gallaratre, Madhusavita Prabhu wouldn't just let me go anywhere. He already made my schedules. And the only place he allowed me to go was Padova, which was not very far. Bologna and Padova. We were one night we were in Bologna, had a program, and then we went to Padova, and we observed Ekadasi in Padova. Stayed up the whole night, some devotees joined. Madhusavita Prabhu didn't want to make that public because he said that the devotees, if they observe Ekadasi like that, then they won't go out to distribute the books the next day. Anyway, it was an excuse because he didn't want to join. But others joined, the temple president of Padova, and some other devotees joined. And it was very nice. Everyone was very enlivened. We actually observed Ekadasi in Bologna. And then in the morning we drove to Padova. And I had to give a class there. And stayed in Padova. And the temple president of Padova, Dayanidhi Prabhu, is a very senior devotee. And he's a very, very, very nice devotee. And he's a kind of a devotee, when he talks about Prabhupada, his voice becomes choked up and tears comes down his eyes. Very, very soft-hearted devotee. And then we had a program in a place called Brescia. There's a very nice Namhat congregation headed by one dentist, young dentist called Gianno Franco, and he gathered around about over 100 people in that program. And Italy is actually a wonderful country as far as preaching is concerned, and people are very, very receptive. And I think because of the Catholic background, they're more receptive to Krishna consciousness. I'm sure you all know about that because it was the same zone, and Italy had always been very, very wonderful as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned. And still now Italy is doing very well. And then that Sunday feast, I had to be in Gallaratre, And I don't know how many, a lot of people came. I can't really figure out how many people.
Hi, Vaughn. How are you?
So, and they have so many Namhat congregations. Like after the Sunday feast, a lot of people came, all these Namhat people came to see me. And all of them were asking me to go to their place next time when I come. And then after Italy, I had to go to Switzerland. They all set up a few programs, mainly three programs they set up. One was in a place called St. Gallen, one was in Zurich, and one was in Bern. The Zurich program was our temple, in our temple. A nice program. But going to Switzerland after Italy was quite a change. Like in Italy, everyone is so vibrant and everyone is so receptive. Whereas in Switzerland, everyone is so cold. Not everyone. I mean, some generally, it takes a long time for them to open up. So Zurich is like that, especially Zurich. I mean, Zurich is a kind of a place where on Sunday feast, if you get 5 people to come, then you consider they had a big gathering. And but of course, in that program, we had the program in the temple, and they had about 30-35 people come there. But we had a nice program in St. Gallen. St. Gallen is about 1.5-2 hours drive from Zurich, east. And they rented an auditorium, and it was kind of, it was almost full house, had close to 100 people. And it was quite unusual for Switzerland, because generally when I give a lecture, I speak for about singing and speaking is for about 45 minutes. And then I leave about 15 minutes for question answers. But in that program, question answer went on for 1.5 hours. They had so many nice questions. And so finally I had to stop. I said, it's getting late, let us stop now. And but a lot of nice questions they came up with. Of course, the topic also was quite exciting, especially for the Western people. The topic was reincarnation. And they had hundreds of questions. And then we had a program in Bern. The program in Bern was also quite nice. The program was in a very nice, they kind of rented a place in a progressive kind of a restaurant. It was a Saturday, I think. And they rented a restaurant, quite big place, and for some reason it was not functioning on that day. And a lot of nice people came, especially young, intelligent kind of people. And a lot of ex-devotees came. Usually we call them, those who were in ISKCON before, but for some reason they are not fully involved in ISKCON now. Quite a few of them came, and actually after the program I spoke to them, few of them, and they told me that they would get in touch with, they'll spend more time in ISKCON. They'll at least keep in close touch with ISKCON. And one boy, I remember, he's an American boy, married to a Swiss girl, settled down there. He was very, very open. And he was literally begging to, to pull him back to Krishna consciousness. He used to be, he told, I never seen him before, but he said that he met me early before. He used to be the servant of Sundar Rupa Maharaj. And he was not initiated. He belongs to the group of Peter Borwash, the professional tennis coach. Peter Borwash became very close to ISKCON, and one of his right-hand man actually joined ISKCON, and he is a disciple of Tamalkrishna Maharaj. His name is Yudhishthir. Those who went to Puri, you all know. So Yudhishthir was Peter Borwash's right-hand man. And this boy, he also was in Peter Borwash's team, and he joined. But after Bhagavan Prabhu left, he kind of lost faith and he left. But he didn't like it. He's outside. He's a coach, tennis coach, in near Zurich, someplace near between Zurich and Bern. And anyway, so I told him that next time I come, I would get in touch with him, and he can spend some time with me. And he was very, very grateful. And there was a few other devotees, those who came up and very earnestly expressed their desire to come back to Krishna consciousness. Actually, when somebody leaves Krishna consciousness, leaves ISKCON, he feels that he will be able to continue his spiritual life outside. He thinks that it will be very easy to follow the four regulative principles and chant and preach. Everyone thinks that he will be able to maintain his Krishna consciousness. But unfortunately, I have seen that it doesn't become possible. Like, gradually, they train to drift away from the Krishna conscious practices. And soon enough, they find themselves in complete maya, breaking the regulative principles, not chanting. And the worst thing that happens is that they start to find faults with the devotees. And that is the worst thing. Like if they fall out somehow, but still if they continue their attachment to ISKCON, then they can at certain point of time they can come back very easily. But those who become critical, for them I have seen it's very, very difficult, because they think that they are right and everybody else is wrong. That's one thing. Another thing is that they think that everybody is wrong and he himself is right, and he doesn't see the defects in himself and does not try to rectify himself. Anyway, we have to try our best to bring those devotees who left ISKCON back to Prabhupada's movement, because Prabhupada used to be very, very concerned about devotees when they left. I have seen often Prabhupada shedding tears when he heard that some devotee left. And I heard Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to fast. He used to fast the whole day if some devotee left the movement. So this is how a Vaishnav feels about the living entities who came to Krishna consciousness and unfortunately left Krishna consciousness. One of the greatest qualification of a devotee is that he is compassionate. Compassion is the most wonderful quality. Because unless and until we have compassion, we cannot preach. We can give nice lectures, very erudite, very charismatic lecture. We can give and display a lot of our wisdom and scholarship. But if we do not have compassion, our lectures will not be effective. As a preacher must feel for the conditioned souls, and then only his preaching will be effective. Often we give lecture just in order to get some recognition or praise. That's not preaching. Preaching means we have to feel for others. So when we feel for the people, those who are far away from Krishna, then what to talk about how much we should feel about the devotees who came close to Krishna and left. Actually, I remember a letter Prabhupada wrote to Satsarup Maharaj. Satsarup Maharaj was very eager to preach to the students in the colleges. And in reply, Prabhupada wrote, "What's the use of preaching to the students in the colleges? First you preach to the devotees, those who came to the temple." And we can see that those who have come close to Krishna consciousness, we have to preach to them. We have to induce Krishna consciousness in them as much as we can. Otherwise, if we just preach and bring them close to Krishna consciousness, and then once they come to the temple, then we treat them, we do not treat them well, then what's the use of preaching? We invite people to come, and when they come, then if we don't take care of them, then what's the point in inviting them? So we have to understand that our main goal is to take the living entities back to Krishna. Those who are far away, we invite them to come close to the temple. And when they come to the temple, then we must invite them to come even closer to Krishna, further and further. But often what happens, due to our passionate nature, if somebody does not become submissive, or somebody does not become submissive, does not accept our authority, then we feel that better that he leaves. But that is actually maya in our part. Krishna will never be happy with that kind of attitude. But it has been happening in the past. Many, many devotees have been driven out of the society because they could not cope up with the management. Because they did not somehow surrender themselves completely to the authorities. And that's why the authorities or senior devotees have to be more and more compassionate. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, I feel that the role of a senior devotee is like that of a father. The father has to tolerate the children or the elder brother. The elder brother has to tolerate the younger brothers. So if we are senior, then we have to be more tolerant and more understanding. Actually, Prabhupada once told me, I was a little depressed because I had a little fight with a senior devotee, and it all, at that time both of us were serving Srila Prabhupada, and that verbal fight took place next to Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada heard everything. And obviously I got smashed because I was just a new devotee. And so I was feeling very upset because I was not wrong. I know that I was not wrong. But because the other person was more senior, had more heavy weight, so that's why he smashed me. And I was feeling very depressed. And at that time I was serving Prabhupada. So I went to attend Prabhupada after that. And Prabhupada could understand my mood. And just on his own, Prabhupada started telling me, you see, the sign of advancement is not in what a big position you are holding. The sign of advancement is in how tolerant you have become. The more advanced devotees will become more tolerant, more understanding. And that instruction of Srila Prabhupada actually helped me a lot in future, especially after Prabhupada left. Sometimes it was very difficult, especially when you serve Prabhupada and then all of a sudden Prabhupada left. Like when your whole day used to center around Srila Prabhupada from morning till night, and even at night, all you are thinking of is just Prabhupada. And then all of a sudden when Prabhupada left, everything became completely blank. And then also sometimes dealing with senior devotees were not very easy. And I can see that how people get hurt. And that's why as a devotee, we have to feel for others. Whether we are preaching or whether we are dealing with other devotees, we must feel for the other person. And then only we can make advancement in Krishna consciousness, and then only Krishna will be pleased. We have to understand that in this society we are taking care of Vaishnavas. And Vaishnavas are actually very, very dear to Krishna. Vaishnavas are Krishna's children. And we are Krishna's servants. So the way one feels about his master's children, the same way we should feel about the other Vaishnavas. We must try to serve others, not take service from others. And although we do not want to take service from others, the others will serve on their own, spontaneously. So this is how the reciprocation takes place. Like we want to offer whatever we have, and others also offer whatever they have. We try to do whatever little we can do, and others also try to do however much they can do. And that's why this society of Krishna consciousness becomes so sweet and so wonderful. So, anyway, so after Bern, I had to go to Austria. Austria, actually I'm very close, I had been working very closely with these areas for last few years. And so, whenever I come to Europe, they expect that I go there. And when I go there, they feel happy and I also feel very happy. So Austria was going through some difficulties. They don't have so many devotees. They moved out of the big place they had because that other place was very, very expensive. They were paying about 10,000 marks for rent for that place. That means 10,000 marks means 200,000 Belgian francs just for rent. And so they had to move out of that place, and now they're living in a smaller place. But preaching is actually better in this place. Like Sundays, I noticed a lot of people come. Whereas in the previous place, not so many people are coming on Sundays. Then the next day, after I was there for 3 days, no, 2 or 3 days, yeah. Then I had to go to Salzburg because there Jai Gurudev Prabhu, started a new temple. He rented a house and he joined up with another devotee with 6 children. And they have a Gurukul with all the 6 children. And they installed Gaur Nitai deity. So Jai Gurudev Prabhu had arranged with me much earlier, month before, that I had to go there and to celebrate that occasion. That was also a very nice program. A lot of people came. And I can see that he is cultivating people very nicely. Now to speak about Jai Gurudev Prabhu, like he is a very senior devotee, Prabhupada's disciple. He's actually Czech, but his parents emigrated to America. So he was brought up in America and he joined in America. And he has been working in Europe for last about 10 years or so. And it was him and his wife, together they were running the center in Salzburg before, and he was doing everything by book distribution. I'm talking about at a time when people were earning, thousands of devotees were earning, or temples were making thousands of dollars or thousands of marks by selling paintings. At that time, he would not even touch the paintings. He would do straight books. And by doing book distribution, he was maintaining his center. And his wife is a translator. His wife is a Yugoslavian. So she translates into Yugoslavian Prabhupada's books. And Jai Gurudev used to go out and distribute books. And he used to tell me that Krishna is so merciful when you distribute books that he gives us just the right amount. Nothing more, nothing less. And he was telling me that, I mean, he had been doing it for so long and he never ever he had money to put in the bank. And never ever he had any debt in the market. So Krishna just provided him with the right amount. And in the course of book distribution, he met a lot of nice people. Like last summer when I was here, when I was in Europe, Jai Gurudev Prabhu told me that he would drive me. I was in Switzerland and whenever I come to Europe, he joins me. So he came to Switzerland and we had a program in Bellinzona. So Bellinzona is a couple of hundred miles from our farm in Ticino. So he wanted to drive me. So he had an old dilapidated Renault. So I thought that he was going to drive me in his Renault. But when I came, then I noticed that there is a big Mercedes. And I asked him what happened, where did he got that from? And he told me that one Indian doctor in Austria, donated that car to him. And it so happens that the day he got that car, the same day his Renault broke down. It was totaled. For some reason, it just stopped to function. So you can see that how Krishna helps his devotees. So, and he cultivated a lot of nice people. And they came and I could see that how potent our preaching becomes when we depend on book distribution. Because books means presenting the philosophy as it is. Books means preaching directly on the basis of Krishna consciousness. And anyway, so that was
our program in Salzburg, we had a beautiful installation of Gaur Nittai deities, and a lot of people came, like quite a few Indians came. They were all professionals, doctors and engineers, and also quite a few Austrian people came, and we had a nice little program, and the prasadam was very nice. And then the next day I went to England. In England they lined up two programs, one on in a place called Finchley in North London, and that program was very, very nice. They had over 200 people. This is also a Namhat program. These Namhat are friends of Krishna. They have been very closely connected to our society, and they want to take initiation. And they organized this program last Saturday in a church. They rented an auditorium in a church and had a beautiful program there. The Gurukul boys from Bhaktivedanta Manor staged the Jagannath drama, and it was very, very nice, and a lot of nice people came. And then there was another program yesterday that was in Leicester. That also was a nice program. That program took place in a temple in Leicester. Our devotees got this temple for our program. And England actually is a wonderful field for preaching, because there are so many Indians, and also the English people had such a close contact with India that they have become, I think, more receptive than others towards Krishna consciousness. And it was a mixed crowd. A lot of people came from different parts, Nottingham and Coventry, and it was a beautiful get together. And actually, the people were so receptive that after the program, we sat together for about an hour, hour and a half, discussing about different aspects of Krishna consciousness. Many of them came for the first time, actually. Especially there was one young boy and a girl. They came for the first time. One of the devotees were cultivating them, and they seemed to be very, very intelligent, very, very receptive. So that's what I've been doing for the last 3 weeks. So today I'm here, as Jagannath Prabhu pointed out, coming back home. And so, thank you very much. Now, is there anything you all want to say? What you all have been doing? How are you doing, Christian? Good. It seems that you're working very hard. It seems. So, does anybody have any question? Should I stop now, or should I read from Bhagavad Gita?
I was someone who saw a member of the family who was very far coming back, and we don't know what to say, but everyone is so happy to see you.
Hare Krishna. But I think I am more happy than anybody else. Actually, my original plan was to come to Radhadesh, come back to Radhadesh only for 2 days. But I made some alteration in my programs, and so that I can spend about a week here. It won't be a full week, it'll be Monday till Saturday. Saturday morning I'll be leaving, because in India there is a devotee. She was a disciple of Bhavananda Maharaj, and she was very much broken-hearted when Bhavananda Maharaj left. So then I was trying to inspire her, and she actually is doing better now. And she has a daughter. She's going to be about 6 months or so, 7 months. There is a ceremony called Annaprashan ceremony, when the child eats grain for the first time. That is when the child is about 7 months old. So 8th of February is the Annaprashan ceremony, and they want me to perform that ceremony. So that's why I have to go back. I'm actually arriving in Calcutta on the 8th morning, and their program is in the evening on the 8th. Yeah, I already announced that I'll speak on Lord Nityananda tomorrow morning. Because you see, if I speak on the Lord Nityananda, it'll take at least one and a half hours. Because better that we do it tomorrow, or Yes, Gangadhar Prabhu. Oh, tomorrow is Narottamdas appearance day. Oh, that's right. Second, yeah. Actually, I was looking forward to that. I thought that on the second Narottamdas Thakur's appearance day, I'll give a class on Narottamdas Thakur. Okay, so tomorrow I'll speak on Narottamdas Thakur. Now it's 8:10. Should I speak on Nityananda Prabhu then today? Yes, Mother Arada? Yeah. Well, you see, if we tolerate, then either he will change or Krishna will remove him. Right? Either he rectifies himself, or if he doesn't rectify, then he won't be able to stay. On his own, he will go away. Right? But we do not want that anyone should go away. I mean, anyone who came to Krishna consciousness should leave Krishna consciousness. Actually, I don't know whether you all know about that. But if you take the statistics of Prabhupada's disciples, we hardly have about 500 disciples left, whereas Prabhupada initiated about 10,000 devotees. So that means we lost about 9,500 devotees. And it's very unfortunate. Our society could have been so much stronger if we had all those devotees in the movement. Of course, then again, not that everyone will stay.
right? Many devotees will go away. But on our part, we should try to accommodate them as much as we can. So regarding that, I can think of one example by Jesus. Like, he was asked how many times he should forgive a sinner. One should forgive a sinner. Or not a sinner. How many times one should forgive an offender? And Jesus' answer to that was unlimited time. No, he's asked once, twice, thrice. And then Jesus says, no. Unlimited times you should forgive him. What difference does it make? I mean, what do we have to gain in the material platform? If somebody takes advantage of us, but if that taking advantage helps us to come closer to Krishna, then I think we should be open to be exploited unlimitedly. Of course, it will depend on our advancement. And at the same time, I can also see that there is some difficulties, especially when we have such a big organization, there's so much opulence. So often, you know, people try to take advantage. And so for that matter, we shouldn't become a fool. We should protect Krishna's property, right? But at the same time, the basic mood should be of tolerance and compassion. Because, you see, management is actually difficult. When you manage, then you have to protect, right? Whereas if you don't have anything, then you don't care, right? Like if you are free, when I do not get involved in management, that's one of the reasons why I don't want to get involved in management. That when I don't have to safeguard things, then I can be more neutral or more detached. And I think sannyasi should be like that, ideally. And I think it would be even better if I could live in a forest. I mean, if we could just keep traveling. Often, I used to think that it would be nice that I just take my danda and keep on traveling from village to village in India. And it's easy, actually. In India, to do that is quite easy because you always find people, those who are very receptive. And I actually did that once.